Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. Very pleased to have back with us on the program today, Terry Lee Kelford of Cornerstone Landing. Terry Lee, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, Bob.
Want to mention, too, that we're going to be doing a week coming up in late April on affordable housing. This is no doubt going to be one of the biggest issues. I think probably when you couple affordable housing in with affordability in general, that's going to be the big issue of this upcoming provincial election in June. Would you agree with that, Terry Lee?
Yeah, as it should be. Certainly, you know, one of the most important issues I think we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, and especially like the pandemic is really, when you look at it from this particular standpoint, affordability, I think that is where the biggest effect has been, whether it be housing, buying food, the cost of housing, employment, mm-hmm. retaining employees, all of these things. All sort of fall under this umbrella. Now, for you, when we talk about affordable housing, this is something that you're obviously no stranger to. How long has Cornerstone Landing been around now?
Well, it was started originally by a group in Perth, I think about 12 years ago now, and then it's evolved into youth-specific housing. It started as a group of people who wanted to open an emergency shelter for folks who were homeless, and they didn't have much luck getting funding. So emergency shelters are extremely expensive to fund. So it was kind of the coming together of Transitions Action Coalition and the community group in Perth that evolved into Cornerstone Landing Youth Services. So, and we've been supporting kids, I think, since 2012. So it's been 10 years for us.
And how has it evolved then? I mean, you move away, obviously, from the hopes to have a shelter, but the mission really doesn't change all that much.
No, I mean, we're just trying to be more creative about how we address emergency housing, I think, simply because I believe certainly in the work and research I've done that emergency shelters for homelessness and housing in Leonard County would be far too expensive for us to be able to maintain. There's very few housing specific funding streams that you can tap into. So to use that all on a emergency residence, you would have very little funds then to do the other work that we're doing, like Housing First, for example.
And you really... you nailed it there when you said like it's hard to come by and finding places to put people right now is one thing. And then finding places to put people that is affordable is another thing altogether.
Yeah, there's a great report that was just put out last year by Steve Pomeroy. He's a researcher around housing and homelessness and consultant, I guess, that does some work around housing. And he released a report that indicated that we're losing about 15 units of affordable housing for every one that we're building right now in Canada. So we're getting so far behind, even while it seems like we're really focused on housing and trying to build as much as we can as fast as possible. We're really way behind the game.
You wanted to talk today about a few things, but one of them, of course, being tiny houses. And you had your organization had a tiny house built a few years back. And one of my favorite interviews of all time was you and I in this tiny house the day that it was completed and you were celebrating. I think tiny houses are a way to solve so many problems. And I guess I'll ask you for the update on your front first before we get into a bit of a broader discussion on it. But what is the latest with your tiny home?
Yeah, so I mean, you would know that because you interviewed me several times around the tiny house, and I was on Lucky 8 several times talking about it. And the backstory, I'm not sure if people remember this or not, but I started talking with the Dean of Algonquin College, Chris Hahn, lovely man who's quite committed to affordable housing or housing options. And he and I were trying to cook up some sort of plan for students to be able to build housing. Unfortunately, they ended up having to close their trades program, and so that's what we were kind of looking at to be able to build the housing. So we ended up getting collectively, we pulled a group together. We managed to get some funding through grants, kind of piece some funding pieces together, built a pilot project. We called it a pilot project because we thought we would only be able to do one. And we wanted to build a tiny home on a trailer, which seemed to be a really popular, fun concept at the time. But mm-hmm. when we actually started doing the work and research around it, we realized it was really almost impossible in Canada to have a legal house on a trailer anywhere in Canada, that you're not allowed to live in anything on wheels in Canada. And that's still actually true. So when we built ours, we had a hard time getting anybody to inspect it when we were building it. So we had reached out to building inspectors. We had explored CSA standards and how we could have home manufacturer approval. But essentially building a tiny home in the Algonquin College warehouse made it unviable to live in permanently. So we've been jumping those hurdles for the last few years. It was a fantastic project. I think it broke open a conversation. You and I, certainly, I'm sure you read a lot of the comments that happened as a result, even 4 or 5 years ago. The comments were not very favorable towards tiny homes. There was a lot of backlash around small houses being built in communities with large homes and how it's going to devalue properties, and those sorts of NIMBY responses came out. But I think that conversation has evolved quite dramatically in the last 4 to 5 years. So certainly a lot more positive responses, a lot more groups and discussions and opportunities to build them. So
yeah, and it's amazing, right? Like, as soon as the need is there in other groups, then the discussion turns to maybe, because we've seen this definitely in the States, right? And first off, you talk about these tiny homes and you talk about the popularity of being on a trailer and so on and so forth. This is all the stuff that you're seeing on HGTV and you know, these tiny home shows and all that. They look really, really cool. But you never see, they could do a whole other show on just the legalities of, you know, having one of these things in Canada. But when you get into the fact that now down in the States in particular, they've got these tiny homes that they're putting on foundations in communities, small communities with shared resources, like a big hall. You know, if you have a family over for dinner, you can rent out one of the rooms or, you know, speak for one of the rooms and have, you know, a gathering in there in addition to the space that you have in your tiny home, which is all on a septic system or some central plumbing system as well. Really, the concept is great. They're using it for military vets to house them. They're using them for seniors. It gives, it's amazing because in that case, it gives seniors their own homes. But you just basically think of a nice retirement home without all being in one building. They're little mini buildings scattered all over, and they still have these central hubs where they can gather. It's a great idea. Why isn't it happening here?
Yeah. And I mean, the joke is if you go to Toronto or any of the larger communities like Vancouver, Toronto, you'll see what they call micro unit condos. I mean, they're 200 and 300 and 400 square foot condos that sell for $400,000-$600,000. So small housing is not a new concept. I mean, tiny homes themselves has been around since World War One, World War Two. So they were actually affordable housing projects launched by the government of Canada to address housing for war veterans. So tiny homes are not new. We have wartime houses and strawberry box houses in all of our towns in Leonard County. So it's not a new concept by any means. What we've done over time, though, is we've pushed the narrative of bigger is better for housing. And unfortunately, we started seeing that confirmed through legislation like planning legislation. So you'd have minimum square footage requirements in towns applied. So you cannot build a house under 1,000 square feet. And so there was this push to build bigger, 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 bigger. And so we ended up over time making small housing illegal, which seems absolutely counterintuitive to what we wanted to do or accomplish, or certainly now. So I think, you know, I think it's important to remember that this isn't a new concept. This is an old concept that we've made illegal over time. We need to go back to some of those basic principles and actually put all the options back on the table to address this housing crisis that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, exactly. And now let's talk a little bit about it specifically from Cornerstone's point of view. This is certainly something that could be used to house youth short term. Even, you know, when you talk about some larger communities, this could offer younger people the opportunity of home ownership, you know, down the road. So, but when we start with your needs, you would have like short-term housing that could be moved to community from community to community.
Yeah, initially what we wanted to do, because we didn't own land at the time. So initially we were looking at having the house move and sign a lease with a property owner that would allow us to put the tiny home on their property. So we'd sign a contract with them for a year or two and essentially rent their land to hook up the tiny home and have it live there for a period of time. What we realized is that the bylaws were not in place to permit that. So at the same time, I was also going around meeting with town councils around secondary units and really encouraging municipalities to permit secondary units. The Provincial Planning Act had changed approximately 3 years ago to say that all municipalities should allow for 2 secondary units per property. So that's one attached to a house. So in addition, you can put in a little unit. Then you can also have a second detached unit as well. So a single family home should be permitted to have also 2 additional secondary units. So we wanted to use our tiny home as a detached secondary unit on a homeowner's property, but realized that the planning the local municipal bylaws hadn't caught up to the Provincial Planning Act. And I would say 3 years later, very few communities have even adopted that legislation to this day. So it takes a long time to get planning changed. It takes a long time for those conversations to evolve, for people to have the motivation to get those plans in place. But if they're not, then it's pretty much impossible to have a a tiny home used as a secondary unit on a property. So the only other option is to build a small unit on one piece of land, which of course land value has gone up significantly as well. So it doesn't really make sense to have one tiny home on one piece of land. You really want two or three or four units on one piece of land, right? But then you're into, if you're in a rural community, you're into issues like well and septic systems and having to accommodate multiple properties. And if you're in town, you have to have all those units hooked up to services, water and sewer. So it's definitely, you know, we're moving. We've just saw, you know, very exciting for me, we just saw the building code of Ontario amended to accommodate tiny homes. And that was a big step because that would have avoided all the problems we're facing with our tiny home now. We actually would have been able to get a local building inspector to come to Algonquin College, inspect our house while it was being built, and then move to another location and inspect it there again. And that was not possible when we built our tiny home 2 to 3 years ago, but it is legal now. So that would have prevented all the barriers that we're facing. The town of Perth is where we bought a house. We were really excited about that. So we bought our first house a year and a half ago. And so we want to use this tiny home as a secondary unit on that property. So Perth does have bylaws in place to permit secondary units, which is great. It's been quite a progressive county in terms of passing grants to encourage secondary units and affordable housing. But we're still up against the building code issues, and there's still some zoning issues we have to do because there's no, it's still seen as a new concept to have a tiny house on a trailer. And so the local municipalities are having to update their bylaws to permit tiny homes on trailers and what the rules would be around that. So even though our house is on wheels, we still intend to have it attached to a foundation and connected to services, city services. So it would be just like a house, like any other house. We would just take the wheels off. It's called tying and skirting it. But municipalities prefer to have bylaws in place to outline what the rules would be around that and to ensure that if people are going to use it in the town, it is hooked up and connected to a foundation. So
I think one thing that we have to say is people are listening to this saying homes on wheels and so on. And then they're saying, what about mobile homes? There's mobile home parks all over the place. There's several in Lanark County, of course. You know, and is the difference there that people generally will take the wheels off? And as you said, you called it skirting, you know, so that it looks like it's a permanent residence.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting, when I was doing the research around tiny homes and trying to wrap my head around why this was so complicated, because initially when I was looking into tiny homes, we thought they were everywhere. You'd go to a website that said Tiny Home Canada and you'd have, like, you know, examples of all these tiny homes across the country. But what I realized,
smiling people, they all have a dog on their little porch. They're all drinking coffee too, or some exotic
tea. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But most of them were actually illegal. There was either some reason why it was temporarily on the ground, but perceived to be year round. And so there was always some, you know, bench rule to allow it to happen. There wasn't really a clear pathway to legalizing these homes. So anyway, so we found over time that the conversation has evolved now to, I think, we're looking at legal pathways now, which I think is really important. And I think, it, you know, it certainly frustrates me as a housing advocate when I hear planners, building inspectors, no one in particular in that category, but say things like, well, you know, you can't live in a mobile home, you can't live in a car. And I'm like, but people are. We have hundreds of people living in cars and campers and mobile homes all over Lanark County and across Canada. The issue with campers is that, or mobile homes as well, is that they weren't really built for year-round living. They were meant to be recreational, including mobile homes, actually. So when I looked into mobile trailer parks, I thought that's the model essentially we're looking for, be a trailer park full of tiny homes. But they're actually built through a CSA regulation as opposed to Ontario Building Code standard. It's a bit of a lower standard for housing, and we didn't want to go that route. We really wanted to build a house that was compliant with the Ontario Building Code standards. So it is a house on a trailer, which we were told 4 years ago we couldn't do. Mm-hmm. We heard all kinds of stereotypes about tiny homes on trailers. I was told that you couldn't build a house on a trailer that would last longer than 10 years. And there's all kinds of stereotypes about what you could and couldn't do on a trailer. So, I think we didn't want to go the CAS mobile home route, even though those are perfectly viable legal homes. And certainly home manufacturers have done a great job about becoming environmental and low carbon and all those factors. They're great quality homes. And you'll see lots of a push from the federal government even right now to adopt more mobile home type or modular housing type projects. So it's not that far off, but again, we really were trying to challenge some of these stereotypes we're hearing about building houses to Ontario Building Code on a trailer. So, and that's what we did. We're just stuck with some hoops to jump.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, like, communities, everyone that I've spoken to, they're excited about this. They're excited about the prospect because it does offer solutions to a number of problems, like we were talking about before, not just for youth, but we're also talking about, as we were saying, seniors and then possibly veterans and really anybody who is in any sort of housing crunch. This is an opportunity to provide a new venue. And that's the thing. We have apartment buildings, we have condos, we have houses, we have semi-detached houses and all that. It's time for something new.
Yeah. And I think the secondary unit piece is something I really believe strongly in. Like for us, certainly in a rural community, as a housing advocate for rural communities, I'm also the chair of the National Alliance on Rural Remote Homelessness. I love the little model that we've come up with, a single family home with two additional apartment units. It blends into the community. It's a house just like any other house in the area. It's not a unit that stands out as affordable housing. And it's one that can be replicated easily in towns right across Canada. So so again, we started with a single family home. We're doing a one bedroom apartment conversion now and then hope to add the tiny home as well. So we'll have three transitional beds plus two apartment units on one little property. So have really cleaned up the house at the same time as doing that. So and it's a model we'd love to replicate in the other towns as well to increase housing. So I've had people reach out to me. I literally, Bob, get a phone call at least once a week, if not twice a week, from somebody interested in tiny homes. And this has been ongoing since I built the house. Like for years, I've been asked to speak at conferences and ask for all the information around planning and building code and what all the barriers are there. So, and I do still think the public is still really unaware of the amount of barriers that exist for tiny homes still. If you want to build a secondary unit on a foundation, easy. Pull a permit, make sure you meet the setbacks, you have parking requirements, you're good to go. But for anything on a trailer, it's still extremely difficult to actually get it sited on land permanently. So
you talk about the hoops to jump through. Yeah. How many more and how long do you see before this becomes an option for you and your organization?
Yeah, well, like I said, we built the house 3 years ago almost. It'll be June, right, when we did the launch that you were at. It's been sitting vacant all that time. Could have been used as housing, but it's been sitting vacant. And we bought the house in December of 2020. So we've been working away on the attached unit and we hope to use the tiny home. But I've been talking to the planning department in Perth for probably a year and a half now. So we're looking at a zoning bylaw. I'm thinking that's the direction we're going to have to go is for zoning bylaw, to actually outline the bylaws that are going to be used to allow it to go on the ground. And then after that, we'll still have to jump the building inspection hurdles because it wasn't inspected while it was being built. So we may have to, we may be required to dismantle the inside of it so that it can be inspected, or various components of it expected. So we're hoping that's at least the legal pathway they give us to be able to get it done. Again, had these changes to the Ontario Building Code taken place 3 years ago, we wouldn't have had this problem. We would have had it inspected as it was built, but there was no option to do that 3 years ago. So I'm really hoping that they do kind of like grandfathering. I really hope they do give us a legal pathway now to get it approved. Certainly we had a college involved as well documented. So I'm not concerned about the quality of the build.
Yeah, for yeah. Sure. And when you think about it, like you talk about how well documented everything is, this is another part that is going to be very well documented. You think you're getting a lot of calls now. Once this thing is being used and yeah. Once this is in place, all eyes are going to be looking and watching to see how this plays out. That's very, very exciting. Did you have any idea that this could be the precedent setting? I don't want to say solution, but precedent setting tool against homelessness and for affordable housing that it could be, and this project that that you're a part of and spearheading.
Yeah. Honestly, 4 or 5 years ago, I was still pretty naive to the whole issue of tiny homes in general. I didn't think it was an issue. I didn't know there was an issue about tiny homes until we started doing the work. And then I realized that what I thought were all these, you know, legal tiny homes on trailers all across Canada were actually not, in fact, legal. And that there was very few pathways to legal compliance under the Interior Building Code or Planning Act for tiny homes. So that conversation has changed dramatically in the last 3 years. So even the positive feedback that now we get, like the comments that you'll see on posts and articles and even this episode, the yeah. comments will probably be quite different than what they were 4 years ago. So it's exciting to see that the conversation has evolved. And that's really been a collective, I think it's been the perfect storm. There's been a lot of people interested in housing homelessness across the country. I think there's been projects start to pop up, like Homes for Heroes, for example. I went to see their tiny home project out in Edmonton. They built one in Calgary as well. They're now building them in Ontario too. So they have anywhere from 12 to 15 units on one property.
Amazing.
Serving vets who are homeless. Yeah. Now they're tiny homes on foundations as opposed to trailers. But again, tiny homes and trailers also go on foundations. But so
yeah.
To make that connection. But and I just had two University of BC master's journalist students interview us and another colleague of mine, Eric Wiseman, about tiny homes, because Vancouver is looking at installing tiny homes as an extension of their emergency shelter program. And so Kitchener just had a whole tiny home emergency shelter type village pop up as well. So we're seeing these projects evolve everywhere, but I still think that the legal pathways to use them are still very unclear to the public. So, and there's a big difference and big range in the term tiny home. It means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So it can be on a trailer. It can be something that's, 10 by 10, that's considered actually a sleep cabin, not a house. There's a lot of variation in terms of the word tiny home and what that actually means for folks. But I'm hoping over the next year or two, as these projects evolve, it'll give us more tangible legal examples. And I think, our tiny home, if we can actually get it on the ground, you're right, I think we'll be one of the first legal tiny homes on a trailer used as a secondary unit for affordable housing in Ontario, if not Canada. So, but I have to be honest with you, Bob, being the first is really painful.
I bet. Yeah, I bet.
It's not a fun process.
But knowing you, I bet you'd do it all over again.
Stubborn for sure. if we hadn't seen changes like the Ontario Building Code changing and attitudes changing, I think, I don't know if I would do it again because it's been a lot of work. And I think a lot of commitment. I have to give credit to the board of Cornerstone too, who's really hung in there and supported this project too, every step of the way. So even with all the delays, it's pretty frustrating to have a vacant finished unit of housing
for
3 years that could have been used for housing. That's pretty frustrating. But I guess when you're, when you're trying to champion the cause of something, there's going to be some growth and pain along the way. So,
yeah. Well, personally, I think it's groundbreaking. And I think it's something that we are going to see definitely happen. And it is going to be looked at as a solution, particularly in rural areas. You talk about Toronto and Vancouver and Ottawa and all this place. Those are places that they need to build up, when you're making, you haven't got all the space that you have out here, and you can create these tiny home communities. And I just think it's a perfect fit here. I know I've spoken to local mayors who agree and think it's a good thing to happen. It's just too bad that it's taking so long for it to happen, but it sounds like it's going to, and I know you're going to keep us updated as well.
Yeah, it's evolving for sure. And I should put a plug in for Tay Valley Township too, because they really were the leaders when it comes to planning, when it comes to tiny homes. So if anybody's interested in tiny homes, call Noelle Reeve and Tay Valley, because they've certainly done their homework in terms of approving this type of housing.
If people want to know a little bit more about Cornerstone, they want to perhaps donate some money or some time or whatever to the cause, and then find out a little bit more about this, what's the best way for them to go about doing that, Terry Lee?
Yeah, for sure. We have a website, www.cornerstonelanding.com. We also have a presence on Facebook with a page and a group, and we have a Twitter account, and I believe we have an Instagram account as well, which I don't take care of. Thanks to Lana for that. We also have some fundraisers coming up though too. So we just had a very successful Coldest Night of the Year campaign. We raised $20,000 from that event, thanks to the Canadian Federation of University Women, who are just a brilliant group of people. And we have a golf tournament coming up in June as well, the Perth Golf Course. And then we also, as you know, were announced as the recipients for the Perth Polar Bear Plunge coming up January 1st of 2023. So those are lots of opportunities for people to get involved. We're going to need volunteers for both the golf tournament and the Polar Bear Plunge. And you can also make donations and sponsor golfers or plungers. Come on out and plunge January 1st, if you dare. So lots of ways to get involved with Cornerstone right now. We've had, we've grown quite a bit over the last 10 years. So it's nice to have more opportunities for folks to get involved. So, and a donation can be made through our website, through the Canada Helps button on there.
Fantastic. And I asked you this last time, I'm going to ask you again, are you going to jump?
I was teasing some of the board, saying I'm going to put like this benchmark saying, if I raise $10,000, I'll jump.
You'll raise that in like a week. You absolutely will.
If we could raise $10,000 a week, I would jump. That would be my commitment.
I don't know if Angie's going to jump, but I am. So,
oh, you are. Okay.
Right. I'm going to jump this year. It's been a couple of years, obviously, but we've done it 3 or 4 times. Angie's one up on me now. So actually, I'd prefer if Angie doesn't jump so that she can't hold that over me anymore. But definitely. And the way that it's worked in the past, Terry Lee, is the group that's benefiting, they jump first. So it's over before you know it. We've been fortunate enough to jump second or third. So if it helps, I can push you in the water. That's, I'm just going
gentle assistance.
I'm offering it. That's what it is. It's assistance. I shouldn't say push. It's nudge. But nonetheless, it's great.
Hearted individual.
Well, I try. It's great that all this is happening for you, your organization, for sure. And this is something obviously we're going to be watching very closely. Thank goodness things are starting to move ahead a little bit now that the pandemic is, in the stage where it is. So we will continue to watch this. And again, in late April, we're going to be having you as part of our week-long focus on affordability, affordable housing. In Lanark County. We're very much looking forward to that and looking forward to many future visits with you as well, Terry Lee.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Our guest today on In Focus, Terry Lee Calford of Cornerstone Landing. We've been talking about tiny houses, where they are right now with theirs and what is to come. Remember, if you want to get more information, just go to cornerstonelanding.com and you're going to find everything you need there to get in contact with Terry Lee and others as well if you would like to lend a hand. Now, tomorrow on In Focus, it's hard to believe, after 2 years, it's our final weekly local COVID-19 update with Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Paula Stewart. Now, don't worry, Dr. Stewart is still going to be joining us on a regular basis, but we're also going to be putting the focus on other wonderful things that the health unit is doing. So yeah, we're going to have our final full chat with Dr. Stewart tomorrow. And if you have a question for Dr. Stewart, please send it along to info@lake88.ca. I'm Bob Perot. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful afternoon.